Edible underwear Lex is a phrase that has never been said before in the history of the English language.
Everybody, we're Sorkin in it. Watching the newsroom, please take just a minute. It's a podcast. Aaron Sorkin might choose about Will and Mackenzie making the news. You're Sorkin in it.
Welcome back to Sorkin in it. I'm Brian Warren.
He is. He really is. Oh, and I'm Lex Friedman.
Yep. You've used that joke before, but it's still funny.
I know. It's what I think every time.
You know, folks, I know that you've got the routine down. You know, we're not doing Sorkin movies anymore. We're doing Sorkin TV, and not just any Sorkin TV, but we're doing the Newsroom. And we are here with episode 5 of Newsroom. You know, and I was editing a recent episode of our particular podcast, and there's one point where you said amen to something that I said, and I think you said amen to that. And I was like, you know, good quote there, Lex, because here we are. Episode 5's name is Amen. And I'm just going to ask you right now, Lex, what do you think of this one?
Well, I don't know. This is the nearest to recording session that I've watched an episode. I watched it this morning.
Oh, wow.
And I liked the parts that I usually don't like, and I disliked a lot. That's my take on this episode.
Wow.
What was your take overall?
I think this was one of those, often towards the end of our episodes, you say, you know, I was just ready to watch the next one. And this is one of those ones where I totally was ready to watch the next one. There were parts that I felt that were, we can get into them, that felt a little on the manipulative side. However, I was pretty much along for the ride with this one.
Okay.
I did enjoy it. This is one of my better ones. I would put it in the top half for sure.
So far, I'm not there yet, but maybe you'll convince me. If you don't remember which episode we're talking about, season 1, episode 5 is Amen. It's the week leading up to Valentine's Day in 2011. And we're covering Egyptian protests when protesters are going after the resignation of Prime Minister Mubarak. And our friend Neil finds an intrepid indie YouTube reporter on the ground who's ready to help. At the same time, we've got a very minorly alluded to story about teachers protesting in Wisconsin. And we've got the Valentine's Day storylines going on, particularly as relate to Jim and Don and Maggie and whatever Jim's girlfriend's name is. And then we've got this whole other thing with Will and Mackenzie, Wade, their dynamic, and of course the plot of the film Rudy. So I think those are all the things that happen in this episode, broadly speaking.
Yeah. And a lot of pretty deeply intertwined with each other. You know, we start off, it seems like pretty focused on the Egyptian uprising, right? And we're spending maybe the first 10 minutes on that. And I felt like it did kind of abruptly just stop covering that. And we started doing some other stuff for a while. This is something I've noticed with the Newsroom, where I'll be getting into the story, the main plot that I think is going on. And then like the newscast ends or something, or like they just kind of cut away from Will. And then we just start doing something else for a while. I felt like there was a big sense of urgency with the uprising. And then I guess we're just not going to pay attention to it for a little bit.
And so there's this whole plot line of the reporter on the ground in Cairo, Elliot, and how annoyed Don is because Elliot's hiding in his hotel room, but he's doing it for his own safety.
Don is such a jerk.
Yeah, such a jerk. And he's like, let's cut away because all he can report on is the minibar or whatever. But like, what's the guy supposed to do? He hides or runs out to the terrace because there's gunshots? I guess he's not. He wants to see what the gunshots are. My instinct is not always to run outside when I hear gunshots outside. So good for him. But you know, I there were some moments I really liked in that opening segment. Like when one of the two stories that they only have one editor for some reason, and one of the two stories they need to edit together involves union busting. And Jim says to the editor, hey, I know that this violates the union, but can I sit down and edit my own clip?
That was funny.
And then I appreciated that, like, the editing Maggie needed was two clips, like two cuts put together. And then it was going to be a very long export because they were exporting things at the same time. Like, it was, I have multiple notes throughout this episode that this was not that long ago, and Aaron Sorkin still does not understand computers or the internet at all. A lot of terms get used wrong, like close to right, but not right. I found that annoying. I am amused by how much Aaron Sorkin likes slapstick. You don't think of him as a slapstick guy, but he loves it. Yeah, it's his heavy slapstick. And I have a note much later in, there's a lot of men getting injured in this episode. some of it, you might say, beggaring belief. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I wasn't a fan of all the injuries happening, but I was a fan of the slapstick. And I thought this episode, here's what I think it is. I thought this episode did well with its comedy moments and with its with the broader stories of the people themselves. I wasn't as into some of the stuff that was like about the, I don't know how to describe it. Some of it worked for me and some of it didn't. But so we get to this moment where Will and Mackenzie are mocking each other, right? They're talking about embarrassing things from each other. And the two that Mac points to are that Will took tap dance lessons, which I don't think has to be embarrassing.
Nope.
And that Will cries at Rudy, which apparently the whole, at least all the males who work there agree shouldn't be embarrassing. How did you feel about that stuff?
Not a big fan of generally like just shaming people in public, whether it is an effective shame or not. Like it is intended to be shameful. And this is kind of the thing that like, if any of my kids pull that kind of move, like we stop the conversation altogether and say, this is not okay. Like this is it's kind of a bullying tactic. And I'm not a fan of it. And I did not find any of that part funny. Like, I agree, Rudy's a good movie, but like that kind of has nothing to do with it.
I thought that the scene was a little funny, but like, I don't like jokes that are just, especially amongst friends at the workplace, that are about cutting the other person down. Like, it just doesn't work for me. Like, it's not punching up at all. It's also, there's some interesting kind of dynamic where it feels like, Don is more in charge of Elliot than Mackenzie is in charge of Will.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. But so in that scene, there's a moment where Maggie like is mocking Jim, I guess. And she's the only one like, oh, you have to do your homework and everything. But she's the only one who says it. She's like, I thought I'd have the safety of the mom, which I get that. Like when you're the only one who yells a thing.
That was a funnier joke.
I enjoyed Mackenzie saying that, you know, I get each athlete comes in, each football player comes into the coach's office and says, and then Mackenzie butts in, I want to take a shower with Rudy. I thought that was funny. That line worked for me. But then when Neil is talking about, we can't get good enough footage from Cairo, or when they're all talking about that, Mackenzie says to Neil, you live on the internet. Like, you'll know somebody who's good at covering the Egyptian protests on the internet because you live on the internet. Like, does that mean some of them aren't heavily online? This was not that long ago.
No.
Like, the internet was pretty, like, he's talking about Twitter and YouTube as a place where this reporter is doing indie journalism. Like, they're all online.
He has made himself out to be, like, the most connected person, both digitally and, like, just, he seems to know people that a lot of other people don't. That line, you live on the internet, like, All the people in the newsroom should be living on the internet by now.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. So basically, I realize I love anytime Charlie's involved, but there's this whole thing where Charlie's yelling at both of them because they're both Mackenzie and Will keep garnering more and more tabloid coverage. And Will protests that he's a great date, which I liked. And then he immediately rushes to defend Mac. When Mac's caught up in this thing where her boyfriend, Wade, who she's booked on the show multiple times, which, by the way, is already bad. Like, just don't do that. But it turns out he is aggressively planning a congressional run and kind of using her. But Will's like, it's Mac. She's annoyingly ethical. And Mac thanks him for that comment. But I liked it. I thought that there's a really nice job of showing Will's obvious omnipresent love for Mackenzie and respect for Mackenzie. And I like that. That worked for me.
He trusts her deeply to do the right thing. Especially with this kind of stuff. And he does kind of, he sees that she, there's this quote from Sorkin at the, in the little bit at the end where he says he loves Mackenzie and his instinct is to make her feel better if he sees that she's in pain. There's that kindness that we haven't really seen Will do a whole lot of yet. And so it's kind of cool to see it in this episode.
Right. I think he's starting to write Will more likably, which is good. But I like the exchange where Will's like, I know for sure you didn't use me. And Mac realizes he used me, referring to Wade. And then Will gives her a pep talk and then adds on the beautiful line, nobody in his right mind would risk losing you. Like, what a sweet
thing. I loved that. I wrote that down too.
But boy, Brian, did I hate what was next for Mackenzie. I think we're still criminally underusing Sloan, who barely gets to interact with anybody ever. And Mackenzie gets to have her West Wing moment. Where C.J. Craig tells Sam Seaborn, that she doesn't understand the census, and Sam needs to give her census 101, basically. And it's a shitty writer device in that episode to, you know, help the audience understand more about the census and what this debate is. But in this case, Mackenzie says, I know nothing about economics, and it's really only to give Sloane something to do and to make Mackenzie look dumb again. And I hated it all.
Yeah.
I hated it all. I was like, just have Sloane fill in for you on the panel. That's the move. Don't do the panel. You're not an expert. Send Sloane. She's more famous than you. it made me mad.
Yeah. That was dumb. It was like the most boring part of the episode too. I think it was supposed to be funny a couple of times.
Yeah.
But it really fell flat, and it felt like just straight up filler. And it didn't even serve, like, the census one that you mentioned, like, was kind of a big topic of that episode, right?
Yep.
Like, the Glass-Steagall Act, like, didn't really have that much to do with this particular episode. Maybe it'll, like, we're planting seeds for all of us to, like, be a lot more intelligent about economics in the 80s and 90s that we'll need to use later, I guess. But, like, I don't know. It really felt like filler this time.
It felt like more than, and I know this is a complaint people have about Sorkin that I don't have about Sorkin. It felt very transparent preaching about how bad the repeal of Glass-Steagall was, but it felt totally out of place to me. I don't know. And I think, like, there were a lot of times where it felt like our heroes were getting beat up on, and
literally
that's allowed in entertainment, right? But like, I also want to see my heroes win. And I didn't think that was all, some of the wins were big enough, but here's the thing I love the most. We get to see the morning show from ACN. And were you a Better Call Saul fan? Did you watch that series?
Oh yeah. I haven't seen all of it, but I've saw quite a bit of it. Yeah.
But Patrick Fabian, so the guy who was the co-host of this morning show, is also a main character on Better Call Saul as Jimmy's nemesis at a law firm. And I love that actor. And when he showed up here, I thought he was so great at this. I thought he was the perfect smarmy morning show host, even though what he was doing made no sense and like probably should just be fired. I love Charlie showing up in his ear and saying, you know, you're going to wind it up in 10 seconds or you're fired. And do it gracefully. And then he does it completely awkwardly and Charlie mocks him. I loved it all. I loved that moment of that morning show. I don't know why that guy is going after his colleagues, but, and they try to explain it later that morning show hates primetime or something, but I loved that whole thing.
Yeah, it was delightful. And it did make me wonder, like, the power dynamics there, like, that he doesn't even say, like, this is Charlie Skinner from, you know, upstairs. He was just like, he just starts talking and that guy already knows his voice and he's like, oh crap.
Yeah. I also like, he's just put me directly in his fucking ear. I love that.
And they don't even question it. They're just like, okay. He never introduced himself to them either. It's pretty funny.
I appreciated that immediately afterwards when, like, Mackenzie's done nothing newly wrong in this moment, right? She's just embarrassed that this is coming up some more. And she comes into Will's office and Will says, she, referring to the female co-anchor of this morning show, she really wasn't ashamed to say she had Bieber fever. I like that. Like, that's Will being funny.
Yeah.
I like it when in comedy moments, when it's the character choosing to be funny, that's my favorite. So that's what happened. Now, some more classic Sorkinisming starts happening. The Valentine's Day stuff. And Maggie is loading Jim up with gifts for his girlfriend, her roommate, so that what's the roommate's name?
Lisa.
Can't get the character's name. Lisa, that's what I thought. Okay, so that Lisa won't ruin Don and Maggie's Valentine's Day.
Again, because apparently this has happened before.
Yes. And so, but she's talking about how Don has this romantic night planned at the Four Seasons. And then she is so impressed by the fact that the bathtub fills up in less than 60 seconds. I don't feel like that's a thing that a hotel has ever advertised about how quickly their bathtubs fill. Like, it felt very Sorkin-y and not good to me. I didn't love it. Didn't love it. but there's multiple moments, and some of them come later, where we give Maggie and Don some love moments. Like when she comes up, when near the end of the episode, Jim has screwed up Valentine's Day and has not called. And Maggie's trying to defend Jim. She's trying to get Lisa to calm down. She's saying, hey, I don't even like Valentine's Day. And then there's Don with flowers right behind her. And she gives him the kiss. And it's just a loving, romantic kiss. And
that was sweet.
Like, what's it? But I'm not rooting for them. So it made me mad. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Don was actually pretty sweet. As far as Don goes, like, with the exception of the beginning of this episode, it was actually a pretty good Don episode. But Yeah. What does he say? He said something like, I love you. This is just an opportunity to get a hotel room for the night. Yeah, I love you every
Which
day
sweet.
Is what he said. Yeah, that was
right.
sweet.
But like, I'm not sure about the excitement of having a hotel room for the night when neither of you has kids and you live in a very expensive city. Like, what's the, I don't get the appeal of just spending extra money. Aaron Sorkin has a, they're encouraging amen in Egypt. Can you compress it into a you send it file?
That's, yeah.
Nope.
Although I hadn't heard the word you send it. I hadn't heard that company in like a good 10 years. So
it was a nice throwback, but you don't have to compress it to you send it. I don't know. A you send it file is not a thing. I don't know. But so Elliot has gotten beaten up in Cairo. He comes back. He's all beat up. He's injured. I did like the moment of both Don and Charlie wanting to be the ones to call Elliot's wife. Like, I thought that all seemed mm-hmm. fair and good. But so now Elliot's back. I really liked that tender moment of Charlie and Elliot. Charlie kisses Elliot's cheek. And you don't see a lot of male colleague friends kiss, right? Mm-hmm. But he kisses him on the cheek. And then he yells at him. And then, like, Don's like, let's put him on TV injured. And it's, I mean, at least to me, it was obvious that Don felt guilty about Elliot getting beat up because Don was the one who told him to go out there. Like, I liked that stuff.
Yeah.
I did not in any way like Neil getting so mad about now there are reporters missing, Amen is missing in Cairo, and he sees Rush Limbaugh kind of laughing at, I guess, what Limbaugh believes to be liberal reporters being captured in Egypt and talking about how he's happy about it, and Neil rewinds it and watches again, and then he gets so mad he punches ACN's monitor and breaks his hand and ruins the monitor. That's not how people act. That's not how mature people at work act. Fight me on this. I'm ready.
We've seen plenty of people act very immature in that newsroom. So I don't know that we can say, like, this isn't how mature people would act here. I believed Neil's anger. I mean, partly just because just even hearing Rush Limbaugh's voice makes me want to punch something. I'm glad he didn't punch a person. But
yes.
I was like, yeah, he's going to end up punching that monitor. And then he totally did. I forgot this whole scene from 10 years ago when we watched it. So. It did not beggar belief, Lex, for me. I found it pretty convincing.
You didn't mind? I have never seen somebody punch a monitor in my life, in real life. I've only seen it in film and TV. I've seen people be mad. I've seen people say, I want to punch this monitor. Yeah. I want to throw this computer. But, like, you don't break off. Have you ever intentionally broken office equipment? Like, stuff that does not belong to you?
I'm a bad person to ask.
Risk of
I'm
injury to yourself. Person.
No, of course not.
Neither is Neil. Like, I don't know. It just, it felt very TV-ish to me. I did, on the other hand, like Don body slamming that door, assuming that weasel was in the office when he genuinely wasn't. I can never remember that guy's name either. What's his name?
Reese.
You're so good at that. I'm to be clear to our listeners and to you, I am bad at all characters' names in all works of fiction. I can never get them straight. But yeah, assuming Reese, so it's funny because Reese and Jane Fonda are both strong presences in this episode without ever appearing in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I liked him body slamming that door and getting hurt.
He walks in the room and is, I guess, Reese's assistant just still hangs out there. And she's like, yeah, he's not there. And he's like, oh, I know he is. But you can tell that Will and Mac, like, they believe that that Reese is not there. And they're just letting Don go nuts. And it was pretty funny.
I liked it. So then we have Wade show up at work because Mackenzie's been dodging Wade's calls. And she has a Jim, who I guess is also Mackenzie's assistant, leave Wade out on a veranda. I don't know what. And it's snowing out there, I guess.
Yeah.
It had some of the worst, I don't know, this is absolutely picky, but that's what we're here for, I think. Some of the worst audio in that scene because there was like...
Yeah.
I don't know how well that transformed. It was like, it was clearly like somebody pushed the wintry cold outside sound effect button, which did not match what we were seeing at all with his very light flurries of snow or whatever. But I hated this scene because, like, this is the breakup moment, and we're supposed to be seeing Mackenzie be kind of powerful in this breakup. But one, I don't know what Wade was mad about with Mackenzie in the first place. Like, she was mad that. He was mad that she had dated somebody before, that she had dated Will before. It wasn't a secret that she had dated Will before.
No.
Seemingly the whole world knew that she had dated Will before. And so he was like, were you ever going to tell me that you dated Will? Like, I didn't even know what that was supposed to mean in this context. His sudden turn from, like, doofy and also clearly clever, where he was planning this congressional run and using her to, like, just pure evil. Like, hey, we knew this was doomed, so why not get something out of it? Like, I didn't like it. It felt like cartoon villain.
Yeah, it was kind of, and it did kind of make you wonder, like, why is he even there? Like, he's been calling so much. Did he just figure, maybe he was calling to tell her, like, all right, I guess we're finished or something. But to show up, well, no, he did show up a fair number of times throughout the season so far. It did just, I couldn't figure out, like, why this conversation was happening there and then, aside from that, like, he'd been trying to track her down. But no, I couldn't figure out also, like, why they were breaking up from his perspective. Like, why right. He was so mad. He didn't have it.
Yeah.
And it's like, did he feel like he was playing second fiddle to Will? It's like, not really. Like, Will was dating the whole time, too. And Mackenzie even, like, was proud to have a boyfriend and that she could show off, too. So
I expected him to say, I knew we were doomed because you're obviously still in love with Will.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would work for me.
Okay.
And
sure.
What my headcanon was, he was calling all day to apologize. Like, hey, don't be mad. Like, yes, I did this, but like, and then got madder and madder at her as the day progressed when she was ignoring him and then came to break up. But like, the breakup reason was, I don't know.
I got it. He didn't look mad when she opens the door. He's like, oh, hey, you know, I've just been hanging out here. You know, it's really cold, you know.
Why do I have to wait out here?
Yeah.
And she says, in this order, leave,
lose
your election and go to hell. I really thought and wanted it to be that it was going to be leave, lose your election, and go fuck yourself. But I like that she wants him to lose the election first and then go to hell. Like,
yeah.
Suffer one more defeat and then go to hell. I appreciate that. All right. Now, at this point in the episode, Will has his scene with Hope from TMI. And she's the gossipy reporter, and he's heard that he can pay her off to get her to stop doing hit pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And she's ready to be paid off, and she's like, I need $50,000 for a restaurant investment. And Will starts to write out a personal check, and that really bothered me. As a reporter, as a journalist, as a man of integrity, he's going to write his check on his own checkbook.
Yeah.
He's not going to have it go through like at least a couple hops before he's just going to give her the check that she can now have that says Will McAvoy paid me off. Like, I didn't like it at all. And I did though like her getting, I liked his getting mad at her when she referred to herself as a journalist. I like that. Like, that worked for me.
I thought the same thing when he pulled out the checkbook. I'm like, this is a gossip columnist. Like, this is the worst person to hand like proof of your, even just like the fact that you can pay her off to make her stop, like that also just feels like such a risky thing to do. And even if there was like a really, it's not like Hope has needed a lot of evidence to do her job of like trashing people anyway, you know? And so just the fact that she's willing to take money at all, feels like who would take that bet? But let's just assume, you know, that this is the kind of stuff that happens all the time. Yeah, writing a check seemed like a really not clever way to do it. I don't think they had Bitcoin back then, or if they did, it certainly wasn't used the way we use it now.
Hadn't been invented yet, but I appreciate that he ripped off the check.
Yeah.
And then when he gets back to the office, there's a classic Sorkinism of Mackenzie already knew what Will was doing and was mad at him, although she didn't stop him. He didn't do it, but she's like, you've ever done that, beat you up, whatever. And you know I can do it because I'm crafty. I like that it was because she was crafty. But every once in a while on the West Wing, the president would know about conversations that had happened between his subordinates. Like, he would be able to reference a conversation between Josh and Donna, even though he hadn't seen it. And there's no actual justification. It's fun storytelling, and it's good writing in the audience side, but it defies logic.
Yeah.
And if somebody told her that that's what Will was going to do, she would have stopped him or said something.
Mm-hmm.
But then she's like suddenly suspicious. Where is he? And then I'm sure you weren't just out for an hour and a half because you wanted to try to pay off a report. Like, it just feels like once you see it, it's hard to unsee it happening. And so I didn't like that.
No, I thought the same thing. When someone of Will's caliber probably disappears for an hour and a half at a time, all the time.
He's a busy dude. Yeah.
He's having lunch with movie stars and he's like having super important real estate business meetings. I don't know. These are the kinds of things that these people do. And no one
lunch with the vice president of the United States. Like, yeah, for sure. He's doing his own thing and he's not there all day. But now everything left in the episode I hate. So go into this rest of this conversation knowing that. First of all, we have, as we referenced earlier, Jim screwed up his Valentine's date. Why didn't Maggie remind him if it was so important? Like, yeah. It's just dumb plotting. Lisa has been leaving messages for Maggie, who didn't get them because she accidentally swapped phones with another person in the newsroom, which is not a thing. And what about us marking them with nail polish? We both marked them. You marked them with identical nail polish and dumb. It was another women are dumb moment from Sorkin, which I did not like.
People do hand each other phones all the time in that newsroom, and then they pick up a phone and then they just start talking to it. I don't know why these two people particularly like swap phones and then lose track of them as opposed to anybody else, but like I can imagine people swapping phones more here than somewhere else.
Sure, but like they're not smartphones, but you know who's in your phone. Like if you ever use your phone, are your caller IDs going to show up as exactly the same thing for the names you've saved? Like you're going to call somebody? I don't know. It just seemed a little silly to me. Then we have that moment where Maggie and Don get their little love moment, which I don't like. Then Lisa's like ready to forgive Jim, who she's pissed at. And what does she mention, Brian, that she's wearing? Do you recall?
Edible underwear, Lex.
Edible underwear. Edible underwear, Lex, is a phrase that has never been said before in the history of the English language. But edible underwear, Lex, it's among the grossest I feel like Sorkin has been in all the stuff I've watched of his, because you don't wear edible underwear for an extended period of time. You don't wear it to go out on a date and sit in the restaurant and then eventually go home. Right. That's not how I have never worn edible underwear. I've only interacted with edible underwear in comedic circumstances where somebody's like, hey, look at this ridiculous edible underwear. Not with the following part of the sentence that I'm wearing.
that I've been wearing for that long.
Yeah. No, I hated that. It would have melted, just to be clear. Like it would have started dissolving. Then, Brian, I think you and I are going to disagree on this. I think that the ending worked for you, and I yelled and booed as I watched the ending of this episode. A line of people snaking through Will's office, first one or two at a time, and he doesn't even notice that there's this line of people, even though he has glass walls, but a line of people there to give Will small token checks to reimburse him because he was the one who paid off somebody in Cairo to get their Amen reporter freed since the station wouldn't do it or the network wouldn't do it. And Neil gives him a check, and then Maggie gives him a check, and then he checks the memo line on the check and sees that it says coach because this line of people is giving him these checks to help reimburse him in a Rudy-style moment. It doesn't work on I know I'm monologuing too much in this episode and I apologize, but this really bothered me for the following, I don't know, four reasons. Number one, who else is organized? Like a random list. Number one, he's a fucking millionaire. You don't have to reimburse him. He said explicitly to Hope he's the only millionaire in that building. So we don't need to reimburse him. He did a nice thing. We can thank him. We can give him a present. We can all pitch in and buy him flowers, but we don't need to give him checks. Two, that's not what the Rudy moment is. The Rudy moment is everybody coming in giving the coach a gift. The Rudy moment is coming in and saying thanks. Hey, it's not even saying thanks. They're saying, we're mad at you, coach, because we want you to put this guy on the active roster. So we are willing to sacrifice ourselves for the benefit of this other person. The guy's already been benefited. Amen is fine. They're not sacrificing anything. They're giving money to a millionaire who doesn't need it in a moment that does not in any way pay tribute to Rudy. And I thought it was pukey and cringy. And then Mackenzie says, happy Valentine's Day, Will. Like, this was my fucking gift to you, was I'm acknowledging the existence of Rudy in some way. And I didn't like it. I did like their hug, but that was it. I didn't like their hug. How did you feel about that moment? I hated this. I hated it.
So there are parts of it that do work for me and parts that don't. the things that do work for me is like, The moment that it was said that they needed to spend 250 grand to get Amen out, I was like, well, yeah, obviously Will's going to pay for this and no one else and the studio's not going to want to. And I think that's one of the things I like about that is that like that's pretty clearly telegraphed and it's believable that Will would do it. And I think that that's like some pretty great character development we've seen in Will is that like he stands up for his team. And he has like genuine affection for the people who work for him. And we didn't see that in episode one. You know, remember when he was like, oh, Don, we were a team. And he's like, I was your EP for 13 weeks. And he's like, give me 15 minutes. I'll find someone else. Like something's happened over the past five episodes that Will is like bonded a lot more. And it's I don't remember how long it's been now. It's like maybe been almost a year in the seasonality of the show. And so like,
right,
that's kind of cool. And then they clearly love him back and stuff. Agree 100% on like the manipulative silliness of the Rudy moment. Like when Rudy came up earlier in the episode, I'm like, ooh, this is like Chekhov's Rudy, right? something else Rudy's going to happen. And I'm probably going to feel like it's too smarmy. The biggest problem I have with this is that your specific point about the sacrifice people are making is like in no way related to people putting their jerseys down on the coach's desk. And that like false equivalency of sacrifice is probably what bothers me the most about it. And then once you get taken out of it, then you're just like, well, this is just kind of dumb. And then I start thinking about how much are they spending? Like those checks are probably what, like a couple $100 each. It's not going to make $250,000. The line's not that long. So
I was guessing $50 to $100 each, actually. And I was trying to give it credit. Like what if it's that McKenzie doesn't understand Rudy, but
sure,
all those dudes do. And some of those here said, no, that doesn't make any sense. This like they all, but I agree with you that we've seen some significant growth from Will and that we know he's going to step up and that's a good thing about him. And maybe this is just the cynic in me. A lot of it to me also reads as he's so rich, it doesn't matter.
Sure.
Like it would be like if I could save somebody or free somebody for $50, like I feel like the $250 or $250,000 is nothing to him. And it feels painless the same way that he was ready to write a $50,000 check for Hope. And this scene happens right after that.
Yeah.
And to me, like a lot of this for me was like, he can solve any problem with money because he's that rich, which I don't fault. I mean, eat the rich if you want, but like I don't fault him for it. Like he got super wealthy by being a news anchor, and so a lot of it for me just reads as, yeah, he can solve a lot of problems with money because he has so much of it. He doesn't have Jane Fonda money, but that's a lot of it was that to me too. But you're right, like we've seen him show this side, including specifically with Neil connected people, where there was that story that Neil was covering about some person who needed money and he's going to write the checks and Neil's going to checks to Neil and Neil's going to send money.
Yeah, like that whole an immigrant weird thing. Situation or something, yeah. Right?
But that's, again, another example of like, well, Will can just give people who need it money. The fact that he's willing to is nice. I'm not taking that away from this fictional character, but it does read to me a lot as, well, the rich guy's going to handle it.
Yeah, that's fair, especially the immigrant story because that was pretty early on. You mentioned the hug and I found that hug very heartwarming too. This is the first time we see Will in this whole episode, really, but we see Will as like the almost like Mackenzie's bigger brother or something. Like there's like a love there that isn't necessarily, I'm not finding romantic. I'm just finding like I don't know. We mentioned it earlier this kindness to Will that we didn't get before. And that hug felt very genuine to me, and I was warmed by it despite the smarminess of the Rudy scene.
I did see romance in that hug and would have not been surprised if they kissed. And I didn't want them to kiss there because I didn't want them to kiss in front of everybody. I didn't think their reunion kiss, when they've had no conversation about what a relationship would be like, should happen in front of all their colleagues. But it looked to me like when you interpret text, when you interpret anything, like the analysis you have is you, right? It's subjective. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it was written this way, acted this way, or directed this way, but it looked to me like there was a moment where Will contemplated going in for the kiss as he went in for the hug. Like I even rewound it to be like, did I make that up or did it happen? But really plays to me like Will is considering kissing her and then hugs her. Not like, no, I shouldn't kiss her. I shouldn't kiss her in the sense the timing is wrong. But I saw a lot of love and affection, including protective love from each of them to the other.
Yeah.
But also romantic love in that. I guess, I don't know. I was a softy for that scene. I guess I needed to like something after all my hate.
I'm glad they didn't go, neither one went in for the kiss.
Yeah, me too. Me too. But man, I literally booed this Rudy line. It was so bad. It's the, like, obviously, and I don't know. I'm assuming people who listen to the show are fans of Aaron Sorkin's or they're just fans of ours. I don't see how you can be a fan of one without being a fan of the other. But obviously, he's an extremely talented writer. He's really good. This one felt so vividly to me like he thought about Rudy or saw Rudy. Somebody mentioned Rudy. He's like, oh, I'm just going to do that and shoehorn it in. And like, I don't even think he pays it off well. I think that if he wanted to pay tribute to Rudy in some way, he had to come up with a better thing and he didn't. And then I would have just not called back to Rudy. Like, okay.
No.
But it did
wasn't
not
necessary.
Work for me.
Yeah.
I am excited for the next week's episode because I hate sitting through these credits so that I can see the 20 seconds of Aaron Sorkin talking about how great his writing is, which is what I find each of those things to be. But I skip. I use the skip button, and then, which you should never do on ads, by the way. And then I got to first they show that next week on the newsroom, and then you get the things. And I don't know. I've complimented before on this podcast how well I think they do the previouslys.
Yeah.
They also did a nice job with the coming up next ones. Like, ooh. I was like, I want to see that.
Well, pro tip to our listeners here, you don't have to do what Lex did. If you're using the app, you know, just back out of the episode, find the extras tab, and then scroll until you find the right extra to watch.
I can't decide which is the more efficient way, but I agree with you that it's the other way.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It feels a little bit like what you're doing is when you navigate around traffic, taking a knowingly slower route, but at least you get to keep moving.
It's more satisfying that way. One question, and I might just slip this in earlier, is Will and Hope are meeting in their weird backroom place, and he gives her the big stirring speech of like, I will make it my life's mission. What does he say? I will rededicate my life to ruining yours. Great line.
Yeah.
To where I was like, I should find out if Aaron Sorkin wrote this somewhere else, but I don't think he did. I think it was just for this. I don't know what's going to happen in future episodes. Is Hope going to back down, or is she going to just like, he only threatened to be mean to her and potentially try to like use his Newsnight coverage to bury her. But what do you think is going to happen? Do you think she's going to back down?
That's a fascinating question. I really liked that scene, maybe even more than other than I didn't like that he was going to write the check. I promise I'm going to answer your question too, but I'm glad you're having us dive back into that moment, because there was something that I really liked in it, which is he gives what he is clearly convinced is a very stirring, intimidating, confident speech. And it plays that way. If I liked it. And then she's immediately like, doesn't say that. She's like, whatever. She's like, she even says something like great speech or like, ooh, I'm so scared, but she says it in a believable way.
Yeah.
And you can't tell if she's posturing or not. She also has a very, to me, unreadable reaction when he makes reference to, you know, is this Leona and Reese, is this coming from the top, like, or he says like, it's clear you tell your friends that this is coming from, and she has a very, to me, not even poker face but enigma face, mm-hmm, about her response to that. My hunch is this: she's not intimidated by Will because she controls the tabloid stuff and he's not going to become a tabloid journalist, and she's got Leona's backing. I have to believe that at some point things come to a head and Will survives and comes out victorious. Sure. But I don't think it's going to be because Hope gives up. I think it's going to be at some point he's going to do something. I really, truly don't remember. And this is going to sound comically wrong, most likely. But like, he'll cover some story in a way that impresses Leona or delays Leona, at which point she'll call off her dogs. And maybe Hope gets traded to some other shitty network or shitty network show. But I don't see a place where Hope is brought down, or where Hope, obviously I don't think Hope's going to succeed in bringing down Newsnight. Is that what the show is called?
Yeah.
Newsnight. Really? He had a show called Sports Night and a show called Newsnight?
He really did. Yeah. My hunch is she'll still go after Will, but maybe she backs off Mac. And that was his goal. Like, come after me all you want. Stay out of Mac's business. And so
I also think that Mac is so upstanding that she's going to run out of things, like, especially now that Mac's broken up with this guy and he's not going to show up on the news anymore. Like, how big a story is it at that point? So I think you're right, but not necessarily for the right reason.
I'll take it. Yeah. The only other kind of gripe I had about this, as I alluded to it earlier, is just the pacing of this particular episode, going from Egypt to the TMI story, back to Egypt with Elliot getting beat up, to more TMI, and then like the romance stuff. I felt like the urgency of an uprising in Egypt was like only urgent when the plot and the pacing needed it to be, and then like we would just take giant breaks off of it. This whole episode takes place over the course of like 5 days, and so I realized we can't just like stew in an uprising the entire time. That part was kind of frustrating to me, and I wanted it to be, there's times when Aaron's really crushed the pacing and that it just felt like very natural to move in and out of different stories. And this one just felt a lot more abrupt.
This is interesting feedback to me only because I didn't get bothered by it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things I didn't latch onto for not liking in this episode.
You had so many other things to choose from.
I'm remembering how fired up I was before. Like, I was really mad about that episode, that scene. But in a, I was going to say in a sad way, but like, I'm this way too. Like, in a believable way, it some in some way kind of reflected to me how that story played out in America. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's interesting. That's happening in Arab. That's, I was thinking about Arab Spring stories as well. Like, it's interesting that's happening in Egypt. Anyway, like, what's up with the Kardashians? Like, not literally that, but like, it's. I think that Middle East news and politics is typically so far removed from our day to day. It's the same. It's the same way that, like, you know, when there's a massive train derailment or terror attack in some other country, we care about it less than when there's a massive train derailment or terror attack in this country. There's escaped convicts all the time. We had one in the news all week as we were recording this show because it was in the U.S.
Yeah.
Because it was in the Northeast. So I don't think that was exactly what the point was, but I also don't think it wasn't what the point was. But which I mean, like, it was an important story in the episode, but like, it wasn't as dominating as Deepwater Horizon or the Tea Party because it wasn't America. And I felt like that was part of the vibe to me.
So it is a good point that we are seeing a more like complete version of these people's lives than just what they would do in front of the cameras at the news desk. And so like they, any reporter even reporting on a major event that's happening in the U.S. still, like, when the camera cuts away, still has to like go eat lunch and go to the bathroom and like go hang out with their kids and put them to bed and stuff. And so there's very normal things that we all do when we're not doing the most critical things in our lives too. So there's something to that. It's just so freaking abrupt to like cut away from like an uprising to like, let's talk about the gossip columnists, but I guess it's what happened.
Yeah. And I think that is their life, right? Yeah. Like, they're covering the news, but they're also being humans who have romance and interpersonal things. See how hard I'm working not to say sex lives, but they have like, they have their life and they have their job of covering news. So like, it's sort of like, there's something that I can compare to like a professional athlete where like, they have a truly bonkers job and then they also are just people.
Yeah.
But so I know what you mean. And I think you're right that it wasn't handled as deftly as it's been handled in other episodes, but it didn't strike me as wrong the way it was shown. Mm-hmm. I know that all I know about next week's episode, I know three things about it. It's called Bullies.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a Sloan focused episode, or at least, or Sloan's going to get more to do just based on the one sentence IMDb description. And we're going to see another Sorkin hero deal with insomnia, which is, I think, a Sorkin trope.
Well, I guess that wraps it up. Anything else we need to talk about this particular one? Or are we going
to
just...
Just want to encourage you to check out theincomparable.com/members. You can support the entire Incomparable Network and potentially pledge some dollars to this show. You get all kinds of bonus content, early releases, bootlegs, and other fun things. As we approach October, it's going to be the membership drive, so get ready. We are planning some sort of special episode. We know what we want it to be, and we're going to see if we can pull it off, and that'll come out sometime in October just for Incomparable members.
I think this particular episode that we're recording right now will be in October. So,
great.
Happy membership month.
Yeah, go become a member, and later this very month, as you're listening, we intend to have a bonus episode. They keep asking me what it's going to be. It's coming. And the only other thing we need to ask of our listeners, besides, you know, checking out Incomparable membership, is to please, if you would so kindly, just keep Sorkin in it.
Oh, great idea, Lex.